I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores, a podcast for and about inquisitive women in the outdoors, on the road, and besides. On the first episode, we talked about fear with Liz Song and Rachel Goldfarb, two women who are no strangers to taking on the unknown. We learned that so often, fear is essential to growth. I left the conversations feeling invigorated and a little less scared to take on this podcast. This episode also tackles the many elements of fear. I interview Julie Hotz, a videographer and photographer living in Los Angeles.
So intrigued by human-powered adventure that why don't I get myself to the trailhead using a bike leaving from my front door? You know, so often we think of adventure as having to get on a plane and go somewhere first, and then everything kind of starts when you get there. It's like, well, you can have adventures leaving your front door in Los Angeles or Boston or wherever you live.
By all appearances, Julie isn't afraid of much. She's hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, and last summer she biked from Los Angeles to Glacier National Park. From there, she hiked the Pacific Northwest Trail through Montana, Idaho, and Washington, all the way to the ocean. I talked with Julie about the challenges of solo travel and overcoming some of her own mental and physical blocks on this particular trip. One of the really fun parts about this episode is that Julie recorded herself along the way, on the bike portion solo and with her hiking partner Grace on the Pacific Northwest Trail. So you'll get to relive the experiences with Julie. And for that reason, you'll hear a little less from me. I want to let Julie's words and experiences shine through so you can live through them as well. I started out by asking Julie how she felt when she left Los Angeles on her bike that first day.
In LA, the day I left on my bicycle, I was terrified. First of all, I was trying to go without any saddlebags and just go very bikepacking style. And I was so in a crunch to leave because my sister's wedding had been the week before. I was moving out of my apartment. So I never had time to go on a dry run. So when I packed all my gear on my bike, I realized, oh crap, I have too much stuff. Everything is garishly strapped to my bike. I've never ridden a loaded bike. I'm going to have to ride a loaded bike up passes, and I've never really ridden up passes before either. But I knew that from previous experience with long-distance hiking that I will just get there, and I will deal with it when I get there. But when I got on the bike, it was such a different balance than riding an unloaded bike, and things were strapped on so haphazardly that I remember feeling like my stomach up in my throat and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to die before I get to Montana. And I rode to a bike shop and right then and there purchased some saddlebags and tried to change up my balance a little bit because I thought if I don't do this, I will die. But at least maybe if I have a better balance on my bike, then I'll have less chance of dying.
So I did read that before you left, you wrote that you're vacillating between nausea and sheer terror and also an intense desire to have nothing but the open road and a vast amount of possibilities before you. Which was fulfilled?
All of it was fulfilled. It's not very comfortable to feel terrified, to feel nauseous, but there's a couple different kinds of fear. And one of the kinds of fear in life is the one that we all think of, like the primordial fear or your intuition. And whenever you have that type of fear, you know, maybe that's trying to keep you alive and that's good to listen to. But all the other kind of fear we have is something I think that's trying to keep you from a lesson you really do need to learn. And so the kind of fear that I was having before leaving on this was fear of the unknown, not knowing if I was going to be able to handle it or hack it, and basically just dealing with my own insecurities. I knew that meant I had to do this. And also I really wanted the open road to be in front of me. And then when I got there, it was so sweet and such a relief. It was so beautiful. And yeah, there were, you know, moments while I was out on the road, like I did a lot of stealth camping and I would ride till dark. And so then I would have to deal with being nervous about, oh, am I going to find a place to camp? But, you know, the more you do that and the more I had to interact with this same type of fear over and over, the more comfortable I became with it. And, you know, to the point where when nobody's dying, you realize everything's going to be fine. As long as no one's dying, everything is fine.
Do you think that's one of the reasons that people gravitate towards through hiking and long bike trips like that?
Absolutely. I think people gravitate towards this type of journey because the smallest percentage is about the landscape and the scenery. Maybe when you're planning it or when you first hear about it, that's what it's all about. But then when you actually get out on the road or the trail or the climbing wall, whatever it is that you're doing, it's really about the internal struggles, seeing the generosity of other people, and having to, you know, be transformed in ways that you don't know about until you get there.
Woohoo! I just found my chocolate-covered sunflower seeds in my backpack. I couldn't believe it only took me a few blocks, you know, to go a few blocks from my house to the Lowe's. I've been there a million times. No strangers ever talked to me. But there was somebody in Lowe's who stopped me because I was there with my bicycle, asking me what I was doing. And then I met Steve in the parking lot and he stopped. He left his car just sitting there, windows down, unlocked. I put keys in the ignition, jumped out to talk to me for 10, 15 minutes. And he just over and over reiterated, you need anything. You need anything, let me know. There's a lot of shiesty people out there in this world. But there's a lot of good people too. And so often in big cities or in so many places, we just put ourselves in little boxes. And we don't take the time to reach out to other people. And really, I think everybody wants that. Often. I also read in your entry right before you left that you quoted one of your heroes, Kristen Gates, and you said, I wish I were passionate about something more safe. I read that and I kind of wondered whether safe actually exists. Do you think it does?
That is a very good point. I think, yeah, I guess nothing is safe in life, because if you are trying to be more physically safe or make your loved ones worry less, then maybe you're not putting your true self in a safe place, because maybe then you would wither away or become depressed or, you know, deal with more anxiety. And I know that when I go out and work through some of these problems, it really helps with my anxiety, with internal conflicts that I have on a day-to-day basis, because I have to come face-to-face and work through that. So for me, it is a very safe place emotionally and mentally. Physically, it's less safe, and I am statistically probably more likely to maim myself. And I know my family does, they are very supportive, but they also do worry.
Just going uphill. Going uphill. Whew. Just going uphill.
I think what Kristen means in that quote too, is that sometimes it's kind of hard to step out and go alone and do things that people over and over tell you are a little crazy. Even if you know that it's not crazy for you, sometimes, you know, when I see most of my friends that have families and these homes, I can't help but second guess myself at times. Like, am I being crazy? Is this the right thing for me to do when everybody else is not doing this? And I think it's just those moments when you're second guessing yourself that you wonder what safe is and what safe isn't.
Yeah, even for us living in a van was like that. And it can be frustrating that when other people aren't able to put themselves in anyone else's shoes just for a moment.
You know, I remember I was in Arizona. I was in a drugstore and I had my bike helmet on and I wore really bright clothing. I was easy to spot. And this guy came up to me and he was like, "Hey, where are you going?" You know, I told him what I was doing. And then he called over to his wife. He was like, "Honey, come here. This girl's riding her bike from Los Angeles to Montana." And the lady looked at me and she scrunched her face up and she said, "Do you like that? Do you like riding your bike all day long by yourself?" And she was so confused and disgusted. And, you know, I told her, I do. You know, I really enjoy alone time. It gives me lots of time to think. And then she asked me, "Well, are you carrying a gun?" I said, "No, but, you know, guns are really heavy. And also I would need to learn to shoot better before I carry a gun." And she said, "Well, fair enough." There's just no scenario that I picture myself ever carrying a gun. A lot of men would ask me, "Are you carrying a gun?" I think they were worried about my safety. But first of all, I try not to be afraid of situations that are not even happening. Second of all, I would much rather approach any bad situation with love rather than fear. And I feel like if I was carrying a gun, I would be more inclined to lean towards fear.
Why do you think that people are so wary of women traveling alone?
I think a lot of people are wary of women traveling alone. I mean, people don't usually say it out loud, but I think people are afraid of women getting raped and murdered and kidnapped. And I have never felt like I was in a situation where that would happen. You know, I think that it would be more dangerous to be walking around at night in a back alleyway in my own city than to be riding a bike across the country.
Yeah, I can't remember who said it, but I read an article and a woman said that she's like, "I'm, especially in the wilderness when she's alone, she's like, I'm way more unsafe in, you know, a highly populated city than I could possibly be, you know, backpacking in Glacier National Park."
Yeah, I always tell people, yeah, do you know how much effort it takes to get out there? Somebody who wants to hurt somebody, that they don't want to put that much effort in. You know, I cannot live my life worrying about things that might happen. If I did that, then I wouldn't drive a car because I might get in a car wreck. You know, I wouldn't go, I wouldn't leave my house, but yeah. I live in Los Angeles and then there might be an earthquake and then I might get smushed in my house. You know, I think you have to make wise choices and, you know, I shouldn't ride without a helmet and, you know, weave my way across the highway, but there's a small chance and I can't, of something bad happening, and I can't let my whole life be decided by that slim chance that something could happen.
Yeah, the way you're describing it, it sounds like fear is a slippery slope. It can really build up and, I mean, can make your life unlivable.
It is. I mean, it's like when you're going to jump off a cliff into a lake below. If you spend too much time thinking about it, then you won't be able to jump off because you've psyched yourself out.
I've done that. And
I have too. Or I've had to like walk away and be like, all right, now I'm just going to 1, 2, 3 jump off. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. And I think you have to 1, 2, 3 jump off with a lot of things in life.
We want to hear your voice on the next episode of She Explores. I'm interviewing Hillary Oliver, outdoor writer and co-creator of the short film Being Here. It's all about the feelings being in the outdoors evokes. So, to bring your voice on board for episode 3, all you have to do is answer this question. How do the outdoors make you feel? Record your answer in a 3-minute or less voice memo on your phone and head over to she-explorers.com/podcast/your-voice to submit the memo. That's she-explorers.com/podcast/your-voice. It's going to be so much fun hearing your thoughts, motivations, and reactions to time spent outside. But for now, back to Julie. We learn about a new challenge that presents itself on the trail.
So my dad drove up and he picked up my friend Grace, who flew in, who was going to hike the whole trail with me. And we all left together, and he took my bike, put it in his van, and gave me my backpacking backpack, and we hit the trail. The whole Pacific Northwest Trail took me 3 months, which was a lot longer than I anticipated. I anticipated 2 to 2.5 months, but I broke a toe halfway through. And after doing a test run on an 18-mile test run on the broken toe, I realized that I had to take some time off before I kept going further. So I took a couple weeks off and kind of slowly ramped my mileage back up as I got back onto the trail.
Were you worried that you wouldn't be able to finish it?
I was definitely worried I would not be able to finish the trail after I broke my toe. For a long time, it was, you know, very to be determined when I'm getting back on, to be determined. And because of forest fires in the Cascades, and because I kind of wanted to meet back up with my hiking partner, I skipped the Cascades because there was a closure in the middle of it due to the forest fires, because the forest fires popped up like right when I broke my toe. So I kind of missed that window to get through completely without having to do a reroute or skipping a small portion. So I thought, well, I will skip ahead and I'll go back to the Cascades if everything works out at the end. And I didn't want to do any of the hike out of order. I wanted to be like perfectly, you know, one footstep in front of the other all the way to the Pacific Ocean, partly because I'm stubborn, partly because it's the traditional way to do a through hike, and partly because of my own insecurities. And a lot of the long distance hiking and other things I've done, even though 90% of it is about being out in nature, enjoying the landscapes, embracing the journey and everything that comes with it, I think a small percentage of it was trying to prove something to myself, because I've always been meaner to myself than anybody has ever been to me. And I'm always dealing with so many insecurities. It was like I was trying to prove to myself that I can do something. When I failed to do that on the Pacific Crest Trail, to do it in one long stretch, even though I had thought I was over it, I apparently wasn't over the fact that I had done it in 2 summers. And I really wanted to do like a perfect through hike right in a row, and to have to break it because of injury and do it out of order was kind of, I was kind of butthurt about it, kind of angry, and which was surprising. And I got really upset and angry, but it was all due to fearing my own inadequacy. And that's not the case at all. I didn't need to prove anything to anybody. I should have taken that time to enjoy all that was around me. It's not a competition. It's something else. And I remember there was a day where I got my angriest, and I was about to throw a temper tantrum because, you know, my, even though I had taken 2 weeks off, my toe was still hurting really badly. And I was about to get to the Pacific Ocean, and I was upset that I was going to see the Pacific Ocean for the first time, but it was out of order, and it wasn't the way I had originally wanted it. And then in that, like the next moment, I realized, you know what? There's only one thing that can ruin a hike, and that's not an injury. That's not quitting early. It's not doing it out of order. It's not fire closures or bad weather. It's only a bad attitude. It's only, your own fears or the own things that you put on something with your mind. And as soon as I realized that, I gave myself an ultimatum. I was like, you either fix your attitude right now or you get off the trail right now. And so I decided to fix my attitude. And it was a huge turning point. And I never wanted to break a toe, but I'm really glad I broke my pinky toe because I needed to learn the tough lesson of you are the one who chooses your attitude. You are the one who decides to be angry or to not be angry, to be afraid or not afraid, whether it's something very external or whether it's something very internal. And that event was something that really kind of set off a domino effect and really helped me open up to having to deal with, realizing some of my people pleasing, codependent, and self-hating issues. And it really has, even though I have used some of these long distance journeys to run away from that and to try to prove to myself self-worth, a lot of it comes down to sitting down, being quiet, and choosing to deal with your attitudes.
So, did the end feel a little bit like a beginning then?
It did, and then everything, I got to the Pacific Ocean and then I went back to the Cascades. And by that point, it was very late season. And I had been afraid of finishing in the Cascades late season because storms can come in. And I've had friends who've gotten caught in storms like that. And it's really scary. And so having to deal with it all at the end felt like a clean slate and a perfect way to end, to go home and to have a lot to think about.
Stand aside, babe.
Go, 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 go. What?
Stand aside.
Is someone here?
Hi.
All
I like
right.
your song choice, though. Have a good hike.
All right, you too.
How did you feel when you finished and you knew you were going back to Los Angeles?
When I finished the hike and was getting ready to go back to Los Angeles, I knew from previous long distance hiking that
Hello.
The transition can be rough. There can be
Going.
culture shock, and there can be depression from
Have a good
physically
day.
not moving as
You
much. Your body gets used to so many endorphins, and so I knew that was possibly coming, and I was prepared for it. But when I got back, the difference was that I had packed all my things up and I hadn't decided where to go back to. When I got back to Los Angeles, I stayed with some friends and I was trying to decide if I wanted to stay there or not.
Did you ultimately end up deciding that Los Angeles was home for now?
Yeah, I am somebody who has kind of transitioned to home is wherever I am. It's very difficult for me to say, this place is my home, because I'm like, well, I don't know how long I'm going to be here. I'm a very transient person at this point in my life, but I also think there's a balance between migrating and nesting. And so I knew that it was a time to nest for a little while. I had a lot to think about, and I knew that it was going to be good for me to be stay to stay put for a little bit and to learn to be quiet and content in the moment and not to try to run off to the next big adventure to soothe myself. I was like, no, there's adventures around every corner wherever you are, and I need to spend time cultivating relationships with people and taking care of myself. And when I got back to LA, here I was, I'm 32 years old. I don't have an apartment. All my stuff's in storage. I'm kind of in a career transition. And, you know, most people, even if we all feel like our lives are out of control, a lot of times the packaging on the outside looks a little more put together. And so I felt a little crazy, like, oh, here's Julie back in LA, not living anywhere. Can she have some couches to stay on? And none of my friends judged. They all just opened up their homes and their hearts. And I realized that I needed to stay in LA because if something I was really excited about spending more time working on was community, I already had a community here in LA. And even though it sounded glamorous to maybe go to a mountain town like Durango or some other place, I already had a place right here in Los Angeles. And I didn't decide to stay permanently, but that's where I am for right now. There are so many things I'm excited to explore with people I love here in Southern California.
Hi. Come on in. Well, did you not wait?
Huge thank you to Julie Hotz for this interview. It was really fantastic to hear about her journey and the places it took her. Julie lives in Los Angeles, and you can see more of her photography and video work on her portfolio website, juliehotz.com. That's juliehotz.com. Along her bike hike journey, she also collected data for adventurers and scientists for conservation.
And they have different ongoing projects where they have scientists, adventurers, anybody who wants to and who has access to help them gather data for their research projects, because one of the most costly parts of gathering data is just manpower. It takes so much time, so much effort, so much energy and resources to get to places, that if there are people already in those spots that they're trying to gather data, then they can gather so much more.
You can learn more about Adventurers and Scientists for Conservation at www.adventurescience.org. A correction from earlier in the episode, the article I read about women backpacking solo is entitled Stop Telling Women Not to Go into the Backcountry Alone, and it's by Krista Langlois, originally published in Adventure Journal. Our next episode comes out on July 14th and features Hillary Oliver, an outdoor writer and the director of the short film Being Here. We'll talk about the way being outside makes us feel. I'll also incorporate your submissions. Head over to www.she-explores.com/podcast to learn how. Thanks to everyone for listening. There's a lot more stories like this on she-explores.com and by searching for She Explores on Instagram and Facebook. Theme music is by Jazar. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.com/SheExplores. Until next time.